This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
Hello and welcome to Newsmakers. I'm your host, Lisa Pugh. Legislative Democrats are out the gate with their first set of priorities in the new legislative session, focusing on issues they say they heard repeatedly on the campaign trail. Leaders in both chambers say and believe there is a great chance for bipartisan agreement in this session now that they have more seats and greater influence. We are welcoming our minority leaders here, Representative Greta Neubauer and Senator Dianne Heselbein. We'll be sharing your 2025 plans with us. So welcome.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you. This is great.
And congratulations in your election as minority leaders and for gaining seats in both chambers this past November.
It's been a great year.
Yeah. So now that you've had some time since November has passed, with a kind of a big loss at the top of the ticket, but also some progress and the state legislature, how are you reflecting on those November results in Wisconsin?
Yes, of course. So it was a difficult year for Democrats nationally, but we are really proud of our results here in Wisconsin. We had fair maps to run on for the first time in many, many years. And we picked up 10 seats in the assembly, narrowing our margins quite a bit. And this is going to really make a change in how things work in the Capitol. As you mentioned, we are hopeful that with these 10 additional seats and 23 new members of the Assembly Democratic Caucus, that the culture is going to shift. And those folks, you know, who are representing all kinds of communities, urban, rural, suburban, every corner of the state, are going to bring incredible energy to the caucus and really help us get things done for our constituents.
Are you feeling equally positive about those mixed results from November?
Absolutely. I mean, I was absolutely devastated what happened at the top of the ticket. And I think as we saw those early results come out, it was like, oh my gosh, what's going on in the United States? But at the same time, in the Senate Democrats, we had five goals. We wanted to keep Brad Paff, which we did, and we wanted to flip four seats. We did all five. So as much as all those numbers were happening across the United States, we were also cheering at different times because we had won new colleagues for the state Senate. So with these new senators, we have 15 new on the Democratic side and 18 on the Republican side. I think there's going to be great bipartisan work happening. I'm hoping the Republicans work with us so we can get things done for the state of Wisconsin.
So President Trump was inaugurated this week. Did either of you watch the inauguration festivities?
So bits and pieces, yes.
What were your reflections on that?
You know, of course, it's really difficult to see someone sworn into the presidency who continues to attack Americans. We had someone at the podium at Inauguration Day doing what appeared to be the Nazi salute. And then, of course, the executive orders that Trump has signed already, withdrawing us from the World Health Organization, attacking those young people in particular who were born in this country, whose constitutional right is to gain citizenship here. Thank you to Governor Evers and Josh Call for joining a lawsuit on that issue. I think we're all quite worried about our rights and freedoms here in Wisconsin. And then, of course, about whether or not Trump is actually going to look out for working people. When you've got the richest people in this country, some of the richest people in the world, sitting front row at your inauguration, that does send a message.
What's your message to people that watch that inauguration that feel similarly?
Yeah, I watched a little bit of it, not a lot. It hurts too much, to be honest. And Donald Trump, certainly in his first presidency, was a president of chaos, and I expect nothing less this time. So it's going to be interesting to see what he does.
You know, despite the gains in seats in both chambers, Republicans say that because Senate and Assembly Democrats didn't achieve a majority in either chambers, that it was their messaging, Republican messaging, that really resonated and was the big winner on election night in the state capitol. What's the response to that? Was Republican messaging resonating with Wisconsin voters?
You know, I think there's always going to be a challenge with an incumbent president, right, and an incumbent party at the top of the ticket. We knew that we were facing some strong headwinds, and there are, of course, real challenges that people in Wisconsin are facing, particularly with high costs. We saw our folks in very difficult districts do really well. And one of the challenges, of course, for us is that because of those gerrymandered maps, we've got Republican incumbents in a lot of those districts. Incumbents often overperform, right? Steve Doyle does the same at the sort of margins there in those very close seats. So we feel really confident that the people of Wisconsin heard our message, that our candidates were at their doors directly speaking with them as much as possible. That's how we're going to win the majority in 2 years. But of course, we've got a lot of work to do.
Senators Lemahieu and Felskowski were here last week talking about GOP priorities in both chambers. Senator Lemahieu said that a major priority in the Senate for Republicans is a major tax cut, specifically focused on that second highest tax bracket. Are there any changes that you would support in that second highest tax bracket to align with what Republicans are asking for?
You know, certainly we care about taxes, and I think if we could do something very targeted for seniors that are living on a fixed income, that'd be something I'd be willing to look at. So far, the Republicans have just been talking, and I haven't seen any proposals in writing yet, so I have to wait and see.
He's talking about reducing that rate in that second highest tax bracket, or collapsing the second highest and the third highest tax brackets together. Is that a reasonable approach?
Well, I think one thing they keep talking about is the surplus that we have, which is wonderful, and that's one thing they want to use the money for. But when you think about the surplus, the only reason it's there is because we haven't been funding education, whether that be K-12 education or higher education, for years. So I think one of the first priorities we should be doing is funding education, K-12 and higher ed. We have other priorities than just giving tax cuts.
Speaker Voss has talked about his priority being this exemption for retirement income, many retirees on a fixed income. Is that an area of tax cuts that you could support in the Assembly, Democrats?
So, you know, as Diane mentioned, it's really in the details. I think we understand that there are many elderly folks who are having a difficult time making ends meet, who are on a fixed income, who have seen their costs increase. It's why we introduced bills last week focused on lowering costs of prescription drugs and the homestead tax credit, which are really targeted at elderly folks in particular. The proposals we've seen in the past were not targeted enough for us. We do need to make sure that Wisconsin is in a strong fiscal position for years to come. But we, of course, are open to conversations about tax cuts that help those folks who are struggling to make ends meet.
How much of that $4 billion surplus should be dedicated toward tax cuts?
I think first we have to be putting more money into K-12 education and higher education and child care counts. I think there's a lot of things that we need to be funding in the state of Wisconsin.
Leader Lemahieu talked about wanting the governor to come to agreement on tax cuts before the biennial budget would proceed. Is that something that you see happening, bipartisan agreement on where tax cuts happen before the budget is negotiated?
It seems strange it wouldn't be in the budget package since it's a financial matter, so I'm surprised they want to do it early.
So you think separating out those issues is not necessarily something that's good for the budget process?
No, I think when we're talking about the finances of the state, we want to make sure, again, that we are in a strong position for years to come. We need to look at taxing and spending at the same time. We need to ensure we have the resources to invest in K-12, in the other priorities that the people of Wisconsin have shared with us. So it really should be one conversation.
You mentioned K-12 education, both of you, as a priority. What are the top three priorities for legislative Democrats? And is there agreement across the chambers on those top three?
I think so, absolutely, which is great. I would say, you know, K-12 education, higher education, child care counts, really investing in the future. Certainly, reproductive freedom is important to us as well.
Yeah, I would just add costs for working families.
Yeah.
So, again, the package that we rolled out last week really focused on cost of prescription drugs, groceries, with a healthy school meals bill that would save the average family in Wisconsin over $1,000 a year, and then the homestead tax credit, looking at property taxes. We, of course, are looking forward to the governor's State of the State and budget rollouts and know that there's going to be a real focus on these issues, but you're going to hear us talk about education a lot. We hear this again and again in our communities, in my area, many districts going to referendum again this spring because they are just forced to do so. Should not be on the taxpayers to raise their own taxes when we have this surplus sitting in Madison.
And on that note, over half, I think, of the school districts in 2024 went to referendum, and they voted to raise their own costs because they love their community schools, their public schools, their neighborhood schools. And it's because the state hasn't been funding them appropriately.
Both Senator Lemahieu and Speaker Voss say there was a record increase in public education funding in the last budget. How much is enough for schools in this next budget?
Well, I'm trying to remember what Governor Evers put out last time, but I know they didn't come near what he proposed, and that's something we need to be looking at, that number.
Mm-hmm. would really like to see the reimbursement rate for special education increase. It's been hovering around 30% for several years. We want to get that much higher. We know that our kids deserve better. And I'll speak for my local school district in Racine County, where we are going to referendum this spring, where we had to cut about $24 million from the budget going into this year. There was about a 10% budget deficit. And there will be similar cuts every single year going forward. And that is going to hit kids really hard. It's not fair to our young people that we are failing to fund their educations.
Both Speaker Voss and Leader Lemahieu talked about the decision that the state Supreme Court is going to make about Governor Evers' 400-year veto. And they say if that veto is upheld, that the corresponding appropriation increase that schools will get every year is going to be adequate, and that they won't be looking to put much more into public education. Does that veto complicate things for what you're asking for schools?
I don't think so. I think we have to stand up for education regardless of what's in the Supreme Court and what they're ruling on.
Speaker Voss also mentioned wanting to have a requirement that any state funding for schools, 70% of that should be spent in the classroom versus on overhead and administrative costs. Is a requirement tied to state funding something you would support?
So we all want resources for the classroom. I think we have that in common. The concern, of course, is what could get cut. And I think particularly we hear regularly from our constituents about mental health concerns for students. I hear from parents that they want their kids to get a great career education in Racine. We've got something called the academies, where young people are getting support to go do apprenticeships and to really get started on their careers. So we all
would love to see... So a requirement
puts
that in jeopardy?
It could, right? I'm not sure exactly what the percentages are of what that would cost, but what I do want to see is making sure our kids are getting a well-rounded education, they're getting the support that they need, and that we have additional resources for the classroom.
In the last budget, voucher schools also got a historic increase. Would you be able to support a voucher increase that was aligned similarly to public school increases?
That would be a hard lift for the people in my caucus to do something like that.
There's been talk of decoupling the funding for voucher schools and public schools. Is that a good idea for Wisconsin?
I think we have some real concerns about that. We know that voucher schools are not accountable to the public in the same way. They do not need to take students with disabilities. Often they are sending them back to public schools if they're not able to meet their needs. I just have a real concern about our tax dollars going to unaccountable schools. I have many people who have come to me with concerns about the vouchers in Racine and the experience their kids have had there. And so decoupling would move that cost right into the state budget, and we, as Diane shared, just have real concerns in our caucus about ongoing support for these unaccountable private schools.
You mentioned the UW system as a priority for you. I know UW-Madison is in your Senate district. Leader Lemahieu has said that he'd like to see a proposal from the UW system that better targets taxpayer funding. He talked about maybe we need fewer four-year universities, or that there should be more specializing among the universities that we have. Do you think that the UW has done all it needs to do to align with declining enrollment across the system?
I think the system is fantastic. I went to school at UW-Oshkosh. I know a lot of my colleagues went to Milwaukee or other ones, and I think no matter where you choose to go to school, every four-year university has a great offering of courses. I would hate to see those courses narrowed and doing what we used to do when they first started, where you had a nursing school or an education school, because sometimes you can live at home and you can go to school and it's better, you can better afford it. So we are, I think, 43rd in the nation in giving money to higher education, 43rd. So it's not a surprise we have declining enrollment. My kids all went to a university school, and I'm grateful, because when you go to a university school, you're going to find your friends, you're going to make great memories, maybe fall in love, maybe fall out of love, maybe fall in love again, right? That's all part of the college experience, and learn a lot along the way. And then they're going to stay here in Wisconsin. What study shows time and time again is when people leave to go to another state to go to school, they don't come back, because those friends and those colleagues, those businesses, those apprenticeship opportunities that Leader Neubauer talked about, they happened in other states. I want people from Wisconsin to stay in Wisconsin, and I want to take all those kids from Minnesota and Illinois and bring them here, too.
If I could just add on this, you know, I have UW Parkside in my region, and when I am meeting with industry leaders, business, healthcare, what they tell me is that they need more people who have an education or who have gone through significant career training, maybe an apprenticeship, rather than less. And so declining enrollment really should be a five-alarm fire for all of us.
So more investment rather than less.
More investment. We need more people going on to our 2 and 4 year colleges, and we are just not making it accessible for our people to stay in school or to return to school. UW Parkside is doing a great job. They've got a lot of people there who are older adults, right, who have their careers underway or families to support them to get their education, but that costs money, and we need to make sure that we are doing our part to ensure that Wisconsinites have options.
You mentioned the package of bills that Democrats introduced last week, including around prescription drugs, the homestead tax credit, school lunch. These are issues that haven't gotten much traction with Republicans in the past. Are you changing the way you're approaching Republicans on these issues?
Yes. Yeah, so we, for many years, have needed to work in a bipartisan way to get things done. We haven't had the majority. And so our members do go and meet with their Republican colleagues and try to understand what Republican districts' concerns are and is there a way that we can work together. So many of our members have been sitting down with their Republican colleagues, those folks they're serving on committees with, especially, and seeing if there can be common ground on these and other proposals.
Any Republican co-signers on any of these bills
yet? I don't think we have any yet, but, you know, we heard about the same issues on the campaign trail. I would imagine that every single person who is campaigning this year heard about the cost of groceries, and so I do hope that we get some bipartisan support.
Leader Lemahieu and Senator Felskowski both said that affordable health care is a priority for the Senate Republican caucus. And Senator Felskowski talked about a package of bills that she's working on that deal with hospital price transparency, pharmacy benefit management reform. She said all payer claims database, insurance price transparency. Have any of your members been approached about these bills, or are these bills that are interesting to you?
The hospital transparency, I believe, came out last year, and what it was is we already have federal regulations to do that. So it'd be requiring all the hospitals to have another system to come and play that they already do for the feds, but it would have to be a different Wisconsin
system. So you don't think
that's
not necessary?
I don't think that's necessary because there's no problem right now. Nobody is saying that this, you know, hospital did this thing bad and we need to correct it doing this. So I'm not sure what her package is getting at for that bill. Certainly, PBM bills, that's always something interesting to me, so I'll be interested to see. We have a good working relationship, so hopefully we can talk about
you
those.
You haven't heard about this package yet?
Nope, I'm hearing it from you.
All right. On Tuesday, Assembly Republicans announced a bill around extending postpartum care up to a year. It's a bill that has had bipartisan support in the past, but that hasn't gotten across the finish line. Do you have more hopes for that bill this time around?
Well, I think we all know that this is a challenge with Speaker Voss. I believe that Senator Felskowski mentioned that specifically, that we know that there is enough support in the Senate, where it was 32-1 with that one person no longer serving. And there historically have been a lot of co-sponsors, bipartisan co-sponsors of this bill in the State Assembly. It would pass if it came to the floor. And so I think it's on all of us to continue to remind Speaker Voss that he is holding this bill up and ask him why he doesn't want new mothers in Wisconsin to be able to have access to good health care for them, and of course, that's supporting their children.
So do you expect this bill to pass, or do you think it might meet that same fate as in prior years?
We are going to do everything we can to get this bill passed.
I'm hoping it does pass, because we are only one of two states, Arkansas and Wisconsin, that don't do this. And right now, they only get services for 60 days. And I've had kids, and I tell you, at 61 days, it's not all just perfect. And we want to make sure that every woman can have the help that she needs, regardless of what that parenting journey looks like for her.
There seems to be more hope this session for some bills that have languished in the past. One example, medical marijuana, which I know you've worked on before. The hang-up for Republicans in the past has been about the proposal for state-run dispensaries or any pathway to legalize recreational marijuana. Are you working in a different way on this issue, or how do you anticipate helping that bill to move forward?
So I've been working on this for years, and honestly, I would prefer to have recreational marijuana, but we're not going to get there with the Republicans this time. It's just not going to happen. So I'm bringing stakeholders to the table. We're going to be talking with them, see how we can make this bill strong. Also working with some doctors that moved from Colorado that were there in the inception. They said they saw some problems, and they'd like to help solve them before they come to Wisconsin. So trying to really tailor something that we think is best for the state of Wisconsin. I know Speaker Voss had his state-run dispensaries, which I thought was a really strange proposal of somebody who says they want less government, and he wanted to grow government in this field, and I thought that was very strange and odd. So working with my colleagues, I have met with Senator Falkowski last session about this issue. I know she's going to be trying to go forward. I don't know if our ideas would mesh, but I think it's important we get things out there so we can start that conversation.
Have you talked to Republicans about medical marijuana yet this January?
I don't believe yet.
And what about in your chamber?
So, as you mentioned, there was this proposal last session, right? Quite limited. I think the concern that I have is I do have people who share with me in my district that they are going to Illinois and they are getting marijuana for pain management. They don't want opioids. They want another option. And we, of course, are losing those tax dollars, but we're forcing people into a pretty difficult decision. And so we really hope that there is space for a more robust conversation about this with Speaker Voss this session. We have not spoken about this directly yet, but I imagine he's going to be getting quite a bit of pressure from his members. We know from referendums and polling that medical marijuana is extremely popular, and I think it'll be difficult for those members, particularly in purple districts, to go home and explain why they didn't do anything this session.
Are there any other bills that you expect Republicans will need Democrat votes to pass in the Senate this time?
Probably the right of first refusal utility bill. That they certainly needed it last time. We didn't get it to the floor, which was unfortunate. I'm hoping we can move on that quicker. Maybe the budget, right? I don't know. The Republicans used to have a rule of 17 votes. They have 18 members, and they would say, we need 17 votes for anything to come to the floor, and we have to be able to pass it, and we don't need Democratic votes. But we learned last time they did need Democratic votes when it came to the Milwaukee Brewers, shared revenue, and the alcohol licensing bill. I think it's going to be even tougher for them this year with only 18 members. Only one person can't make that 17 vote. So I've met with Senator Lemieux and Volkowski saying, let's try to work together and pass a budget that we can all be proud of and other things this year. We'll see if we can get there. It won't be for my lack of trying.
The governor has already foreshadowed that in his budget, he will include the most expansive gun safety reforms that he has ever proposed. Where do you think there is any middle ground with Republicans on gun safety reform?
Well, of course, we're all still reeling from the tragedy here in Madison at Abundant Life, and it really does bring this issue close to home. You know, there's a Republican legislator, Jerry O'Connor, who had family who are connected to Abundant Life as well. We did actually see a proposal come out, I believe it was yesterday, from Republican legislators on safe storage, and that was good to see. That's a bill that Democrats have worked on in the past, and I hope that that means that there's a little more openness to this conversation. We have seen tragedy here in Wisconsin. I really hope that our Republican colleagues don't wait for another tragedy to really take action on common sense policy, on universal background checks and red flag laws that the overwhelming majority of Wisconsinites support.
Have you heard from any of your caucus and or in the Republican caucus around gun safety reforms that might move in that chamber?
No, but I was happy to see that bill come out yesterday, and it was a former State Representative Therese Brousseau bill back in the day. So it just goes to show you could work on an issue, put a bill out there, and years later,
years ago.
Right? And then it comes back, and all of a sudden maybe become law. So that's kind of exciting. I was going to give her a call today and be like, guess what? Guess what's here?
What do Democrats hope to get done on PFAS this session?
So we were incredibly disappointed to see the dollars held up in the Joint Finance Committee for remediation last session. The more we test in Wisconsin, the more PFAS we find. And we know that these are forever chemicals, and they have really detrimental health impacts. And so first priority is to get those dollars out for remediation and to figure out what else is needed. We cannot allow communities to continue to languish with these PFAS in their water systems, especially when they are struggling to make ends meet at the local government level as it is. So that's a priority for us. We, of course, believe that we should be holding polluters accountable and looking to future regulations to ensure that we're not continuing to contaminate our water.
I want to move on to President Trump. We talked a little bit at the top of the show about these executive orders that were signed related to immigration. What, if anything, can legislative Democrats do around some of these executive orders and concerns around immigration reforms?
Well, one of the things that we do is we get a lot of calls into our offices, and I'm sure you do too, just people worried about what they can do, what they should do, what they shouldn't do, people very worried about what a Trump presidency looks like.
Are there any other policy changes expected out of the Trump administration that you think Wisconsinites should be prepared for?
Well, we've already seen attacks on the LGBTQ community. We expect, given Trump's past statements, that he will be going after reproductive rights in some way. There are a lot of concerns, I know, for our friends and neighbors, of course, on immigration issues as well, and going after birthright citizenship. So I know I've been part of many meetings in my community, I think all of us have, with those groups who we expect to be most impacted, seeing what we can do to look out for our friends and neighbors and just to keep Wisconsin moving forward despite Trump's efforts.
The next big election in Wisconsin comes up in April with the state Supreme Court race already hitting record fundraising numbers. Are these highly partisan, highly expensive races good for the state?
I think it gives voters a choice of who they want representing them in the Supreme Court, and I think that's a good thing.
And there's a lot at stake, would you say?
There's a lot at stake.
What are the big things that are at stake in that race?
You know, we're often going back to doors. I'll be knocking on doors in this election as well. And it's not hyperbolic to say that this is an incredibly consequential election, that it really will determine the direction of the state of Wisconsin. We expect that the court will be grappling with the effects of the Trump administration on reproductive rights, on Wisconsinites' ability to thrive, and frankly, on the rule of law and our democracy here. So we'll be talking about all these issues with Wisconsinites, and we have seen the impacts of a conservative court. We have seen the impacts of a court that is fair and impartial, and I think Wisconsinites will choose to continue with a court that is going to uphold and protect their rights.
Another race that's shaping up to be a big one is for state school superintendent. There are now three candidates in that race. Do either of you anticipate endorsing a candidate in that race?
Oh, I've endorsed Superintendent Underley.
I have as well.
All right, yes. Superintendent Underley. Governor Evers, do we hope he runs again? He said he won't say until after the budget.
I think that's probably smart, right? I think he needs to get that done. I hope he runs again. I think he's done a nice job for the state of Wisconsin.
Of course, we support our governor and look forward to his decision.
Well, as we're wrapping up here, I know that Republicans holding majorities of both chambers, and even though we have more seats, what does success look like? I think both of you have talked in the past about upholding Governor Evers' veto has been kind of major work, just playing defense on some Republican policies. Does it change how you work in the Capitol, and how are you going to measure success at the end?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, for many years we've been on defense, and we're thrilled to be in a new position where we have real leverage in these important conversations impacting our constituents. Assembly Democrats wake up every day and go to work trying to get things done. We want to invest in our schools. We want to lower costs for working families. We want to ensure that Wisconsin is a place where everyone has the ability to thrive. And so our measure of success is taking advantage of every opportunity to accomplish those goals, working with our colleagues in the other house, the other side of the aisle, in the governor's office, and partners across the state to get things done for our constituents.
So is success an increased number of bills passed, or is it some particular issue that you're able to get across the finish line?
I think it's going to be something different this time. I think it's going to be measured by how many meetings I have with Republican leadership and how we can maybe get things done for the people in the state of Wisconsin. I think people are sick of the chaos in Washington, D.C., and it just started. And so I'm going to continue to treat my Republican colleagues with respect and also say, what can we get done in a bipartisan manner, whether that's the budget, whether it's the Roper bill, whether it's the postpartum, anything that we've heard on the campaign trail, healthy meals, whatever that is, let's get that done for the people of Wisconsin and let the strange stuff keep happening in D.C. and let's not bring it home.
All right. Thank you to both of you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for
having us.
And thank you to the viewers of Newsmakers. Be sure to tune in again as we highlight the issues and sit down with the decision makers who make a difference for all of us.
You have been watching a production of Wisconsin Eye, your unfiltered window into legislative deliberations and public policy programming, where our mission is to provide Wisconsinites an opportunity to access the legislative process and connect with conversations that inform our citizenry. Please consider supporting our mission, and thank you for watching. Wisconsin Eye, policy made public.